I love scotch. I love scotch. Scotchy, scotch, scotch. Here it goes down, down into my belly.
Picture perfection and poetry. Impenetrable force fields are over me. I smothered our notebooks in cocoa leaves so that we can be considered some dope MCs. I'm still floating over these niggas' heads with the anti-gravitational potency, impregnating the slower speech with the up-tempo thought process and the ultra speed. Nitrous in my shit hits the vibe with fecal acceleration, lacing them on the road with me. I dip on I-5 with riders and Southsiders try to diss and we'll show ya heat. Marachi philosophical fonzik impersonations are cool. Forget about it and quit hate. The game spitting nigga cane, fixing to switch lanes with Snake Griffin in its plane. Shit's finna change.
Razor.
Insane in the brain, Mr. Kane, the motherfucking hustler main.
Razor.
Stay spitting with a vision to give him a taste of venom from your nigga Snake Griffin.
Razor.
Insane in the brain, Mr. Kane, the motherfucking hustler main.
Razor.
Stay spitting with a vision to give him a taste of venom from your nigga Snake Griffin.
Me and Alec Lira back at iller than most. Niggas don't like our rhymes.
In Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, we believe all oppression is intersectional. And this means our analysis of current events frequently includes discussion of difficult and explicit content. Any combination of the following topics could be included in our show: murder, rape, war, climate change, racism, sexism, violence, sexual violence, homophobic violence, heterocentrism, discrimination and abuse against individuals of nonconformist sexuality, domestic violence, child abuse, child rape, child neglect, elderly abuse, verbal abuse, police brutality, microaggressions, ableism, cyberbullying, genital mutilation, ideological extremism, and people just being total fucking assholes.
On Friday, February 19th, several hundred people marched in protest in Flint, Michigan, as details continued to emerge about the lead poisoning of the city's water supply and the cover-up by both political parties. The speakers at the rally, including longtime Democratic Party operative Jesse Jackson, various union officials, celebrities, and local politicians, sought to limit blame to the Republicans and encourage illusions in the Obama administration and the Democrats. Many of those participating in the march, however, expressed the crisis revealed far deeper problems about social inequality and the character of American society.
We're here to be a voice. This isn't right. We need our infrastructure fixed. We need consequences for those at hand. We need justice. And this right here is why I'm here.
The fact that the government's trying to hide it instead of help, it's just not right. It should be a human right to have clean water available 24/7.
At home with water, we use filters on our kitchen faucet. We use bottled water daily. I don't have one over my shower head yet, and my kid's skin is still breaking out.
I call it toxic, corrosive water. It's absolutely horrible.
It sucks that new GM can't be held accountable for what old GM did, because you guys take a drive around and find all the abandoned warehouses that are still in process of being torn apart and the ground's polluted so no one can buy it. And they left it in bad shape. They're definitely not the only cause.
Truck and bus is the only remaining GM factory here. They closed the last maybe two years ago.
That affected the whole economy here. I mean, it was like dominoes. One thing affected the other. It was just incredible. I mean, it's like year by year, things got worse. More people were unemployed. People started relocating. People who had family members in the South started moving back to the South.
I've been here all my life, outside of leaving to go to college, and I came back. And it's just heartbreaking to see the decline in the city.
This shouldn't have happened. These are people, lives. They're women and children. This is a community. Flint, Michigan is not a business. I think if you take some of the money from the industrial military complex, I think America's infrastructure could be developed. One B-2 bomber could fund how many schools?
But do you realize what you're saying is what's necessary is socialism?
I mean, it's either socialism or the aristocratic families that, what, 10% to 1% have complete control of the corporations and the politics. I think the people's lives in Flint are worth more than a handful of millions of dollars or a billion.
My name is Ashley Diamond. I'm a transgender woman of color, and I am a protagonist. As a nonviolent offender who was incarcerated in the worst, most violent prisons in the state of Georgia, it's horrific within itself. The violence that I suffered at the hands of other people was truly, 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 truly rough. Never once did I ask to be released early or not to have to serve my time. I asked to serve my time safely and to be respected as a human being. Because the thing that I don't think people got, yeah, you could cut all my hair off, shave my eyebrows off, you can take away that care that was very detrimental. I mean, my body was completely reversed. That person is a person that, you know, she's still here. How can, as a human beings, we make another human being feel so unvalued that their life is disposable? I speak about this because I don't want anybody else to feel like that. Nobody should feel like that. I was in a really bad position and spot, medically, physically, and psychologically, when the SPLC stepped in. And, you know, it was a life and death situation for me. The entire time it has been.
What our case has revealed is that there's a system-wide practice in the Georgia Department of Corrections of humiliating transgender and gender nonconforming inmates, of subjecting them to state-sanctioned abuse. System-wide disrespect, neglect, failure to appreciate the humanity of transgender individuals. And if that's at the attitude or at the level of even greeting an individual, you could imagine what was taking place when it came to healthcare, when it came to protecting these individuals from sexual assault. Ashley and others were told repeatedly, well, you're transgender, what did you expect?
What was coming clear to me on the inside was that I was creating a problem, and I was a problem, and I had to be dealt with. Because not only was it just, you know, me being raped and abused and mistreated medically, this was uniformed bigotry. It was regulated. I grieved it, and I wrote letters. I verbally said to you that I'm being raped, and I'm being attacked, and I'm being harassed, and they're hurting me, and help me, essentially. I begged for help. At the end of the day, I'm hoping that the changes that are brought about will impact lives. I hope that it will inform decision makers, policy makers, politicians, future lawyers, future transgendered people to really be unified.
The news is a shit show these days, and we're here to give you a break from the white supremacist media bullshit by bringing you the shitty news so that you can feel less like shit because you know the people discussing all the fucked up shit give a shit about you and the shitty situations you deal with every day. So shit. Pour yourself a glass and settle in for Father Teresa's Wine Cellar.
Okay. So This morning has been the shittiest morning that I have had in quite a while. Youngest child is in the hospital. He's been in the hospital for almost a week altogether. Has some sort of weird skin rash issue, and they haven't been able to figure out what it is yet. So I've been sleeping at the hospital at night with him, getting up in the morning and going to work, and then going from work back to the hospital. So I've basically been living in a hospital for the last week. They still haven't figured out what his issue is, and they keep calling in more doctors. We've gotten nowhere. So that's a level of frustration. I am still coming off an infection I had in my hand, so my hand is still a little bit swollen and sore, and I'm tired and I'm crabby about that, especially because it's my left hand and I'm left-handed, so it makes everyday shit more difficult. So I'm annoyed about that. And then today, I get a text from my oldest son who says he's in school, but they are in the middle of a soft lockdown because somebody was making threats about shooting up the school. So, of course, I freak out. I call the school. The school says they are having a soft lockdown. There's extra police presence, but so far, they have no evidence that the threats are fucking credible. Which is like, what the fuck? Do we or do we not live in America, which is a country where fucking school shootings are a pretty constant occurrence? Mass shootings are damn near a daily thing, but niggas be like, well, there's not enough of a credible threat. So, you know, I would just like to point out we've reached that point as a nation that the probable and realistic threat of a school shooting is not a reason to fucking cancel school. So he's there. And I start going online trying to figure out what the fuck is happening. Apparently yesterday they had a school assembly to talk about Black History Month, because it's February, it's Black History Month. And some Black students performed original pieces. One, I believe, was a spoken word piece. One was a song, like a rap. And just, you know, performing their own pieces about Blackness and what it means to be Black and where they're at with Black History Month. So, one of the students, who is a Black male, made a rap about police brutality. One of the Black young women made a piece about, it was called Angry Black Woman. And white kids got pissed off because Black people talking about Blackness, and they said things like Black Lives Matter and police brutality exists. And white people, because they are the very fucking font of rationality and logic and good behavior, flipped their shit and apparently started yelling Black Lives Spatter in relation, in you know, to come back to kids who were saying Black Lives Matter. So, Black Lives Spatter, that's where their creativity and maliciousness lies. And then, apparently, it broiled onto Facebook, and several students were talking to each other online and in groups making threats, talking about coming to shoot up the school today or to enact violence because they were disappointed that Black students actually fucking talked about Black History Month during Black History Month from a Black perspective. So, that happened. Everyone got upset. And now there's these threats at the school. And of course, the local papers are reporting it, and there's a bunch of parents on there saying, but all lives matter. Why would they do anything that's divisive? And the fucking superintendent said, oh, well, I don't think the school really did a good job of looking at the content because it didn't offend me, but I could see why some people would be offended. Really? You understand why some people are fucking offended by Black people saying Black Lives Matter and police brutality exists? So he basically justified and coddled, you know, the white kids, and now white kids are threatening to shoot up the school because Black people said words and exist autonomously. And that's just where life is at right now.
William said he won't attend my wedding unless I crip walk into my reception.
We might as well hop out the pulpit and let the choir preach it. Your argument would have teeth if you would quit biting Phoenix. Try to be Finn, we can leave them slayed. Three languages, English, tea, and shade. Wine cellar to the bone gristle. We throw missiles on the warpath to make his soul sizzle. And I attack him with the fat flow. I make it dance like Hillary to get the black vote. I'm a super predator about the hilltop, so I ain't paying attention until she does the crip walk. She can study it on Lokestopedia. For now, I gotta deal with the social media. Different day, but the same turd. Corny motherfuckers wanna drag a nigga like James Byrd. With your clickbait schemes and plans. With niggas like you, who needs the Klan?
Something about you is seeming fake.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
Coming at me with your weak brigade.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
And I don't care what your people say.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
So memorize it and repeat the phrase.
I speak three languages, English, tea, and shade.
If you're more of a reader than a listener, you can peep our written content at socialdissonance.wordpress.com. Father Teresa's Wine Cellar is rated R for keeping it real.
All right, what's going on, gang? So this audio that you hear right here, what you just heard, that was the show opener, and you're about to just hear the show break, which is about 19 minutes and 30 seconds, but it's not the full podcast. The full podcast can be found at Father Teresa's Wine Cellar, anywhere that you download a podcast. All right, so this is just the opener in the middle, and that rap that you heard there, three languages, English, tea, and shade, that's the name of the full episode, and that individual track is right here in our SoundCloud page here. There you go.
Mandatory life without parole may violate Eighth Amendment under Miller. In Miller versus Alabama, the United States Supreme Court held that imposing a mandatory sentence on a child offender constituted a cruel and unusual punishment in violation of the Eighth Amendment. The question remained whether the holding in Miller applied retroactively to cases on collateral review. 3 years later, the court took up that question in Montgomery versus Louisiana and held that Miller's prohibition on mandatory life without parole sentences for child homicide offenders announced a new substantive rule that, under the Constitution, is retroactive in cases on collateral review. The argument in Montgomery provides a roadmap for future Eighth Amendment challenges. Specifically, Miller's substantive and procedural aspects has new implications for the scope of the Eighth Amendment and offers interesting opportunities for future adult offenders to challenge the constitutionality of mandatory life without parole sentences and life without parole sentences. Lost in the discussion about the question of the application of Miller to cases on collateral appeal are the broader consequences of the Miller decision in both its substantive and procedural components. In fact, the retroactivity discussion in Montgomery sheds light on these potential collateral consequences. As a substantive decision, Miller extends the core principle of Woodson versus Carolina and Lockett versus Ohio that criminal offenders deserve individualized sentencing consideration. As such, mandatory death penalty sentences and mandatory child life without parole sentences violate the Eighth Amendment. Since life without parole sentences is the imposition of a death penalty by other means, commonly called death by incarceration, Miller's core principle of individualized sentencing should also apply to mandatory life without parole and life without parole sentences. The court has stated that death is different, and now kids are different. So there is no reason that life without parole should not be considered different, just the same. The consequences of the sentence is significant enough to mandate judicial consideration of mitigating evidence. The idea here is that the seriousness of the sentence invokes the Eighth Amendment requirement of individualized sentencing and consideration of mitigating evidence, such that cabining the application of this constitutional principle to the death penalty and child life without parole seems arbitrary. A broad reading of Miller as a procedural decision similarly opens the door to a host of arguments, but related to life without parole sentences not mandatory life without parole. If Miller's core principle is requiring consideration of mitigating characteristics at sentencing in light of the rehabilitation potential of children, then it follows that subsequent hearings further into an offender's time spent in prison might also be helpful to determine the length of sentence. Imposing a life without parole sentence threatens human rights in similar ways to mandatory sentence. The mandatory sentence denies consideration of one's potential for rehabilitation. The life without parole sentence denies any future consideration of one's actual rehabilitation. Refusing the offender a second look and deciding that as a one-time final matter forecloses any opportunity to present evidence supporting release from prison, just as a mandatory sentence forecloses any opportunity to present evidence supporting the opportunity for release from prison. The human right here lies in the procedure, the opportunity for a court or parole board to consider the merits of an offender's case for mitigation and release. The procedural consequences of Miller then suggest that life without parole sentences may also violate the Eighth Amendment and that they deny consideration of mitigating evidence at a point after the initial sentencing hearing. Under each conception of Miller, there exists significant potential to challenge the constitutionality of mandatory life without parole and life without parole sentences. In light of Miller and the Montgomery decision, prisoners serving mandatory life without parole or life without parole sentences can use those cases to springboard from to immediately file either a direct or collateral appeal in the court claiming their mandatory life without parole or life without parole sentence violates the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution. Then, let the fighting to abolish mandatory life without parole and life without parole sentences begin across America. From the belly of the beast at Prison Radio, I am Shaka Buna. Thank you for listening.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
It's Thursday, February 25, 2016.
It was, it is, a simple case of letting the market work. We're going to let everybody compete.
Saudi Arabia declines to help U.S. oil companies survive oil's downturn. Big Coal's new trick to get out of paying retired coal miners' pensions. Sea levels rising faster than at any time in the last 3,000 years. Plus,
this is a global public good to invent something that can solve this problem.
Microsoft billionaire Bill Gates proposes a billion-dollar breakthrough energy research fund. So why aren't renewable energy experts happy?
I don't know, but I suspect we're about to find out. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Clean Power Plan aims to cut carbon pollution 32% below 2005 levels by 2030. That's not possible. Not without going back to the Stone Age. For one thing, you'd have to stop human beings from exhaling.
Well, all I can tell you is that this planet will be better off when Rush Limbaugh stops exhaling. Just saying, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, coal is in trouble, and now oil is in trouble. It's not a great time to be in the fossil fuel industry, it seems.
No, it certainly isn't. And it looks like we are going to see cheap oil for a while longer. At an annual oil industry conference in Houston this week, the Saudi Arabia oil minister confirmed that Saudi Arabia will not cut its own production in order to stop the global oil glut.
That is not going to happen because not many countries are going to deliver. Even if they say they will cut production, they will not deliver. So there is no sense in wasting our time seeking production cuts. Let some inefficient supplies decline, and eventually the market will balance.
Those inefficient supplies he's referring to are U.S. oil producers whose costs are too high to survive much longer with such low prices. Saudi Arabia is keeping prices low in order to be the last oil producer standing.
Hey, it's the free market, U.S. oil producers. You guys love that, right?
Coal is also in decline in the U.S., with major coal companies now declaring bankruptcy. But big coal is using those bankruptcy laws to legally shed their employee pension and health care obligations and the environmental costs of cleaning up closed mines. There was a bipartisan aid package in Congress to restore coal miner pensions and health care, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell from the coal state of Kentucky just blocked it.
You mean the Republicans aren't fighting like hell to take care of these coal miners who they say they must protect, and that's why we can't get rid of coal because, oh, the poor coal miners?
That's right.
They're hypocrites. Who saw that one coming?
Meanwhile, a new study finds that sea levels are now rising faster than at any time in the last 3,000 years, and that the rate is accelerating, especially over the last 100 years, thanks to man-made global warming. The researchers say if no action is taken to cut emissions, they calculate the ocean could rise as much as 4 feet by 2100 and will continue to rise for centuries. And yet another new study finds that cutting the emissions that cause global warming will also save more money than it costs. That's because it will save lives by reducing toxic air pollution, a leading cause of death worldwide. Researchers calculated that cutting emissions would ultimately save the U.S. economy alone about $250 billion a year by avoiding the healthcare costs from all the asthma, lung cancer, and heart disease that Americans will not be suffering. Billionaire Microsoft founder Bill Gates this week said he and other billionaires are going to mobilize billions in private capital for a new breakthrough clean energy research and development fund to combat climate change.
The group of private investors would bring several billion in so that we can nurture these companies up to a pretty large stage. But we do expect to make money out of this thing. It's great that we have that incentive, the financial incentives to get it out at scale quickly, and that's also the climate benefit requires that same mentality.
However, energy experts like Joe Rome at Climate Progress say that while they welcome new research funding, what we really need now is billions for deployment. We already have the technology we need, they say, to transition the world to renewable energy, but we need money to build it faster. And time spent on waiting on breakthroughs could be better spent building wind and solar and battery storage.
Yeah, but, you know, the guy who created Windows, for some reason, wants to make things way more complicated. I have no idea why. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Headed for the open door. Tell me what you're waiting for. Look across the great divide. Soon they're gonna hear the sound, the sound, the sound. We come running.
It's now time for Big Gay News, brought to you by Lavender Media. This is Shane Luke in Minneapolis, and here are your headlines for Thursday, February 25th, 2016. First up, big gay news from Georgia. Telecom company abandoning Georgia after sweeping anti-gay bill passes. The Raw Story reports that a telecom company will be moving out of Georgia after state lawmakers pass sweeping anti-gay legislation. 373K, based in Decatur, announced its decision via its Twitter account, saying that the passage of the First Amendment Defense Act, HB 757, which would allow both individuals and corporations to discriminate against GLBT people, was something that saddened them and convinced them that it is time to relocate. Kelvin Williams, co-founder of the company, said in an interview that, quote, "I'm gay, our CFO is gay, we have people from every walk of life working here, and, quote, we don't tolerate that crap." The bill has been heavily criticized, and legal experts have said that it is likely to be deemed unconstitutional. Next up, Party City Edmonton Valentine could be probed as hate crime. The Huffington Post reports that a man said he is filing a complaint with police after he received a Valentine at work that was defaced with a homophobic slur. Dagis Sigorski said that he received the Valentine from the Party City store where he has worked for years, and that it had a homophobic slur written upon it and indicated that his sexuality was the reason why he was not being scheduled for more shifts at the job. Party City's public relations firm issued a statement that said that the company does not condone such actions, and that they are committed to providing a fair and inclusive work environment for all of their employees. Next up, chef told a lesbian couple they need a man on Valentine's date. Pink News reports that a lesbian couple has claimed that a rude chef ruined their Valentine's date by telling them they need a man to heat things up. Ellie Parker and Lucy Stenger of Lafayette, Indiana, said that their Valentine's Day dinner out to the Japanese steakhouse Asahi was ruined when the chef grilling the food for the table treated them differently from the heterosexual couples also seated at the table by asking them where their Valentine's dates were. Parker said that the chef told her and Stenger that, quote, it is legal, but it's such a waste to not have a man, and even told them that he would come with them to heat things up, which she said both insulted and sexualized her relationship with her partner. For our last story, half of black gay men will be diagnosed with HIV. CBS News reports that if current HIV diagnosis rates persist, about half of all gay black men and a quarter of gay Latino men in the United States will be infected with HIV in their lifetime. This is according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Presented at the Conference on Retrovirus and Opportunistic Infections in Boston, the findings are to be looked at as not a foregone conclusion, but rather a call to action, according to Dr. Jonathan Merman, director of the CDC's National Center for HIV/AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and Tuberculosis Prevention. The report points to several possible reasons for the exceptionally high rate of HIV exposure in these groups, some of which could be socioeconomic issues such as poverty, limited access to HIV prevention education, higher quality health care, the tendency for people to have sex with partners of the same race as themselves, and the general stigma surrounding HIV transmission, as well as attitudes toward homosexuality in the African American and Latino communities. That's it for today. Thanks to Linda Raines for compiling the stories. I'm Shane Luke in Minneapolis. Join us and tweet your take on today's stories on Twitter at the handle Big Gay News.
The Israeli government is pouring $26 million and tasking many of its Secret Service scientists and dirty tricks operatives to wage a digital war against BDS, the Boycott, Divest, and Sanctions Movement. An Associated Press article, picked up by Alternet, reports the Israelis have already targeted and made to disappear web pages that are linked to BDS websites. An Israeli corporate executive said the mission is to dismantle the digital infrastructure of groups in Europe, the United States, and South America that Tel Aviv considers to be anti-Semitic. The Israeli government position is that everyone that supports the BDS movement is anti-Semitic because they want to delegitimize the Zionist state. Hillary Clinton agrees with Israel. In a letter to a billionaire fundraiser, Clinton said, "I know you agree that we need to make countering BDS a priority," and she promised to help fight back against further attempts to isolate and delegitimize Israel. Clinton has collaborated in Israeli cyber wars before. She was Secretary of State in 2010 when the Stuxnet program, a joint U.S. and Israeli digital assault against Iranian centrifuges, was discovered. This time around, the cyber war will not be targeting Iran or the Chinese, but Americans, Europeans, and anyone else that challenges the legitimacy of the world's sole surviving colonial apartheid state. American supporters of the BDS movement cannot expect that their rights to free speech and association will be protected by Democrats or Republicans in Washington, not when it comes to the legitimacy of Israel. The emerging movement that goes under the heading of Black Lives Matter should take note. In addition to the dirty tricks and hyper-surveillance of the U.S. national security state, activists are also in the crosshairs of the Israeli secret services. Israel was white-ruled South Africa's closest military ally for the simple reason that they were both white settler apartheid nations rooted in an ideology of ethnic supremacy. In 1975, the Zionist regime in Tel Aviv offered to sell the white regime in Pretoria nuclear weapons in three sizes. The Israelis feared that, should white minority rule collapse in South Africa, Israel would be the only apartheid regime left standing on the planet. They could no longer claim to be, at least, not quite as bad as South Africa. But, as Bishop Desmond Tutu and others have concluded, apartheid Israel is actually worse than apartheid South Africa, both in its genocidal policies against the Palestinians and as a constant threat to the survival of the planet. The term illegitimate doesn't come close to describing a state that is an affront, an insult to the very notion of civilization. All decent people must oppose Israeli apartheid. Unfortunately, Beyoncé and Jennifer Lopez and Alicia Keys are not decent people. They have no problem performing in Israel. The Congressional Black Caucus is not composed of decent people. Their junkets to Israel are must-attend events, and they joined with all the other members of Congress in a resolution to support Israel at the moment the apartheid regime was slaughtering thousands of Palestinians in Gaza. But a Black Lives Matter movement must be decent and internationalist, and to that extent, its activities will be targeted by the world's last apartheid state. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to blackagendareport.com.